you might see something from an attractive standpoint of being on the Fox River nearby to a lot of amenities or something. Well, that might be able to charge a higher rent rate. Therefore, you can spend a little bit more money in the cost of construction in order to get that return that you want.
Welcome to Surgeon Syndicate. If you're paying attention, you know that you only make money when you work. It might be great money, but it's dependent on you. The information on this podcast will help you solve that. We interview experts and provide analysis into financial freedom through commercial real estate. Why? To help physicians like you thrive. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to Surgeon Syndicate. This is your host, Dr. Michael McManus, and we are back today with Dean Hunt, who's a vice president at one of the commercial general contractors here in Green Bay. And he's given us some great insight on really what's happening in the ground up construction market and in building commercial properties right now. So let's dive back into that great conversation with Dean Hunt.
Have those things settled down right after COVID, that when material costs and all that supply line, that over the course of a project, the costs sometimes just skyrocketed because every month the steel cost more, or you couldn't get something, so the price doubled.
Yeah.
Has that stuff settled down now?
It has. That fluctuation has definitely settled down. Most contractors out there will lock in a time period for you, and I recommend that as far as setting a price, and then they'll lock it in, and they'll lock it in with the subcontractors. But there was a point that some of the subcontractors wouldn't even do that because of the pricing was fluctuating so much on their end that they said, hey, this is good for the next 30 days. And you're like, okay, well, geez, they still have 6 months of their due diligence here to figure this out. So that's gotten better. And then you had things going on with like your heating, ventilating units, your rooftop units, where in some cases, just because they wanted to hit when a piece of equipment, like in the manufacturing setting, was arriving and they needed to have the facility up and running. Say the facility called for 4 rooftop units. Well, those rooftop units weren't available, so we went to 6 or to 2 huge ones. And then people are just paying the cost because they're saying, well, I can't be waiting for a month. This equipment is going to be set up and needs to be running and be producing. So they're willing to absorb those costs just to maintain what they needed to do. We have actually a 60,000 square foot steel fabrication company that we own in Oshkosh. And I talk to those guys a lot. I'm like, where's steel pricing? Where's this? I can't figure out steel pricing. I mean, they come up with some of the weirdest reasons to jack their prices. And then if they're hungry and they don't have the sales, all of a sudden the prices come down. For instance, the UEW was striking. They said that the steel manufacturing plants shut their production down because they didn't know if the car companies would be ordering, which is their largest customer, is the car companies. So they steel companies that also supply steel to the construction industry, like us, were just cutting all their production down. So therefore, supply is dropping and our demand was still high. So they just started raising their prices. But end of the day, it's like we're all back to normal and prices really didn't come back down in steel. We had weird things where there was a manufacturing plant in Texas. I don't know if you remember that. It was that cold snap that they had in Texas a few years ago. It was right around the COVID time or right at the same time with the supply chain. But there's a huge company in Texas that manufactures insulation. They weren't prepared and they had all these water lines break. And so their production stopped because of that cold freeze that they had. Well, that affected overhead doors. They provide all the insulation that went in your overhead doors, insulation that goes into your ceilings of all your steel pre-engineered metal buildings. And all of a sudden, the price on overhead doors went through the roof, and you couldn't get doors because they couldn't get the insulation to put in between the steel. It's just all these weird snowball effects that happen, and the fires in California affecting the lumber industry and Canada too, and all that impact. So there's always those things that can come up. Concrete was affected a couple of years ago because they were concerned about the water levels in the Mississippi. And a lot of concrete comes down through the Mississippi, down in the southern states. And therefore, the water level in the Mississippi wasn't deep enough. So they had to ship a lot more concrete via rail and truck, which is a lot more expensive. But they don't just charge the self more. They just raise the cost of concrete across the board to cover that increase in cost that they're experiencing. So we had some huge increases in concrete. And it was like, who'd have thought the water level in the Mississippi was going to have that much of an impact? But I don't know. But overall, I think most things are under control. Steel is always kind of a what's going on. I think that the speed of change has stabilized. I think that was your original question. So we're not too worried about being able to lock in 6 months, 8 months price guarantee. I don't think we'd go out over a year. I don't think we would lock that in for anybody. The other thing that I think is really interesting that we did experience too, that a lot of people don't realize, and this is probably a watch out for any of your investors out there, there's a term called estimating fatigue. And so we saw, and I told you earlier about how we had some people like during COVID, they pulled back. Well, then we saw a lot of changes in prices. So we had to go back to all our subcontractor suppliers on a project they already looked at and said, okay, it's back up around. Look at your prices. Give us what you think. Then they saw those prices come back and they thought that was too high. So then they come back out and they put it back on the market and bid it again. Or bidder's fatigue, I guess is a better term. So we saw what happened eventually is you see, it's the same project. We all know what's all going into it. We still have the same quantities, but because the market's been so good and most of us had no gaps in our schedule, somebody comes back and says, well, what's the price today? They would just slap a percentage increase on it and send it back in. They wouldn't go back and reprice it to their suppliers because they're kind of burned out on looking at the same project 3-4 times. So instead of just putting a higher number on it because they've got a lot of work and then send it back to us. And so that's the other thing you got to be concerned about with some of your listeners that, hey, if you're out there trying to battle and keep finding a better price, better price, better price, it actually is going to work as a detriment to you. And you're going to start seeing people putting more numbers on it because they're wore out. You know, they're like, okay, I've looked at this project 4 times now. I'm not going to go through and verify. I'm just going to put a higher number on it. That'll cover me. I know what the market is doing. And I don't think you get the best pricing that way.
Once you lock in a price, so somebody, if you're investing in a deal and they say, here's our cost to build, once that's locked in through the construction process, how much variability is there still for these things like, oh, price of our concrete went up, or when you sign contracts, how much of this set?
Yeah, you know, I think the other area I'd be reluctant is be careful of companies that don't have an established reputation with their suppliers and with the market. Because what we found during this process too, and what we see now with like the labor shortage I talked about earlier, we pay our subcontractors within 30 days. So when we work with them and say, hey, we're going to set this price and we're going to guarantee this time frame, would you commit to it? We get that commitment from our guys and we get it from our suppliers. We're number 2 in the northern region for Varco Pruden, which is a pre-engineered metal building supplier. And they said, hey, you're one of our biggest customers. You come to us and say, will you lock this in? They're going to lock it in. And if there is some fluctuation in there, usually they can work with their suppliers to battle that. We can do that with our subcontractors. I guess the big no-no word in construction is change order, right? Nobody wants to hear that. I think, yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen the cartoon, the marina and the yacht, and it has a little dinghy next to it, and the dinghy is called original contract, and the yacht is called change order. So everybody has that fear. But for us, the only time that we see change order that we pass on to our clients is when there's a significant change in material. Right? Or in the scope of the work, right? If you say, yeah, I was going to do a 10,000 square foot building. Now I want to change it to a 12,000 square foot building. Well, that's a change in scope.
Yeah.
It's a lot more materials. It's a lot more different things going on. Or I decided to go with all granite countertops in the whole facility or flooring materials or whatever. That we're going to have to pass on and go to you. But if it's the original contract, the original scope, most of your good contractors out there are going to find a way to hold that pricing to you. We had to work when it came to the supply chain, though, when it came to, like, say, the rooftop units where they're switching size, that we had to sit and negotiate with the client and say, hey, we bid 4 units and now it's 6 units. I mean, it's not much we could do about that. But when it comes to like just overall material costs, that we can negotiate out with our suppliers and have no impact on the client.
Okay. So from a construction standpoint, so there's a lot of discussion right now about office to apartments, because everybody wants to use that to solve the office and the apartment issue. And from my understanding, it's not as easy as it sounds. When you get into an office building and everything that's required to make it residential, can you just talk about that a little bit and what that takes and what the cost of it is?
Yeah. And that's what I mentioned earlier about when you're looking at an existing building and if you're going to go in and buy this office and turn it into apartments. Really do first the market study of what the rent rate you need to be at. And that's where I think I would work. A lot of times, you know, we've been brought in where somebody is just trying to get a certain market in there, but that's not what the market in that area is demanding, right? So they may want to do, hey, we're trying to turn this into 3 and 4 bedrooms. Well, that's not what the demand is in the area. It's a 2-bedroom. So one is that challenge as far as the layout of the building and what your market is to make sure that you can match that market. The other would be your infrastructure. That to me is always, how is this building laid out? So if it's an office building with lots of old school office where you have a lot of individual units around the outside, cubicle on the inside, well, how can that be converted? What's it built out of? Is it every floor 4 to 6 inches of concrete, or is it traditional construction as far as steel studs or wood? That can have a really big impact on how you're getting water to the units, how you're getting electrical to the units, heating. A lot of times offices are set up, if it's a big kind of open space configuration, now you're going to go all the individual units. So now you got to get heating to all these individual units and do something like PTAC units that you see a lot of times in the hospitality industry or in assisted living facilities, that they have their own little units that are in their space. Or do you do with something more controlled? Electrical usually isn't too bad, but it's going to be your plumbing. Obviously, you got to get water to every unit and your heating and ventilating. So those are the watch outs when it comes to that. And you do see that. We see that in Green Bay, and obviously with United Health building their new location there. But their existing location sat on the market for a number of years until the price got so low that the developer bought it and is tearing it down. The cost to actually convert their old office building, which I think was in 400,000 square feet range, we looked at that a couple times with different developers, and just the cost to try and turn that into apartments, it couldn't get to it, because you got to think about that rate if somebody wants to pay as far as the rental rate, and you just couldn't get it there. There's too much of a gap of what the market is willing to pay and what the costs were to develop that. It's not to say that there isn't still those opportunities out there. It's just that's where the concern would be for me, is when you look at the stuff, is really get an understanding of that cost structure and then what the market is demanding for that particular location. And that can change. You might see something from an attractive standpoint of being on the Fox River, nearby to a lot of amenities or something, well, that might be able to charge a higher rent rate. Therefore, you can spend a little bit more money in the cost of construction in order to get that return that you want off of that. But there's still a lot of demand for it. I mean, that's the thing to think about. People often ask me about office. And believe it or not, we built a 60,000 square foot office building on just off of Highway 172 on the Fox River there, where RBC went into. And we did that 2 years ago. I think we finished that project at a time when nobody was building office, right? Everybody was working from home and they're full. The office market has changed, and you've seen a lot of downsizing from different professional services, especially in like the CPA firms, insurance companies. A lot of their people are working from home. But what happened is they went from, let's say, a 60,000 square foot building to a 30,000 square foot building. They still have an office location somewhere. But during that process, they also upgraded. So they left their own individual 60,000 square foot building, and then they moved to a brand new building that somebody built for them at 30,000 square feet with all the bells and whistles they wanted and some different technological advances that they didn't have in their existing building. So there's still a market out there. It's just different once again. So I don't think it's something to necessarily shy away from, but you start with a client, right? Like we started with RBC, was going to take 2 floors. So we knew we had a launching pad for the rest of that project. And then we got Vincanterra, moved into the shipbuilders, moved into, I think they took a floor. And then the rest followed. There were smaller offices that followed, but we had some bigger clients that took up 30,000 square feet of that building. So they're out there, and there's a lot of them changing. And then I've been hearing recently, as I've been attending a lot of national organizational events, and then some CEOs that I know in the area, and they're actually starting to bring people back. So that efficiency that they thought they had by people working home isn't there. And then the collaboration side of things has really been hurting. So it may change. You may see a different work week. So I don't think it's a market to shy away from. I think there may be some coming back to that. But yeah, there's still a lot of inventory out there for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it sounds like with the conversions, and this is what I've always seen, is that when you see a building converted to apartments, it's usually higher end. Because it's an expensive process, it has to be a higher end rent.
Yep.
And it's hard to take an office building and turn it into low income because of the cost of conversion.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's true unless you can get the building at a really, really low rate, which I've seen that as well. Is that eventually somebody just said, we moved, we downsized, we moved to a different location. This location is just sitting there. What do we do with it? I think Humana is one that they're still in about half of the building, but they sold their whole entire building at a really inexpensive amount. And the developer that bought it is able to hold on to it until they can find a way because he got it so cheap that you can kind of skirt that. And I think Humana just said, we'll just take the loss and get rid of it because we don't need it.
We'll get back to our show in a minute. But first, I want to offer you an opportunity to accelerate your learning. My life changed and my ability to start becoming work optional changed when I gained the people and the knowledge to start investing in commercial real estate. One of the key people there was Ash Patel and joining his Invest Beyond Multifamily Mastermind. With that, I had the people and the knowledge. Well, that mastermind is no longer open, but for a fraction of the price, Ash has now made a course, and this is probably the most valuable set of information, the quickest way to move along your learning curve. So if you are interested in actively investing in commercial real estate and retail and industrial and office, I would recommend this course to you. We're going to include a pre-sale link both in the show notes. It'll also be on the surgeonsyndicate.com website. And in your checkout, we'll save you another 1%. I know it's not a lot, but every little bit helps if you use the discount code MIKE1487. So take that step now and move your future forward. If you're not interested in investing actively, give us a call here at Fortress Capital. And let's talk about what your goals are as a passive investor. But it's time to stop listening, start acting, and let's move your future forward.
So that would be the thing. But I think still that's where we get back to where we originally started. One of the things, though, is if it has been sitting vacant for a while, that can also have a really big impact on your infrastructure. Your heating and ventilating units are meant to run. Your systems are meant to run. You got a plumbing are meant to run, and you have gaskets and things that just, if they're not being used, they can deteriorate. Then you have a lot more costs when it comes to that. But I think the layout too is really key. I know a developer that bought one of the Kimberly-Clark buildings in Neenah and converted it into a lower income housing project that fit perfectly for the neighborhood that it was in. The building was a kind of an old style office layout where it just lent itself really well to individual units. All on one floor, infrastructure was great, really well maintained. So the cost to convert that over was not very high, and they got it at a really reasonable rate. And so they were able to hit a lower income rental, which fit the neighborhood. And once again, what I said earlier, matched that neighborhood too. And I think they're doing really well with that.
Okay. So it's not an undoable project, but it needs to fit pretty well to make it work.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you'd like to add? We're getting close to the end of our time here.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer too that if you have a group that you're looking to get involved with as far as the development of the project, don't get glossy-eyed over this rate of return until you really do the homework on it. And that, I think, it's worth your time reaching out to, like I said, a good qualified general contractor, architect team that can look at this, that'll bring in good qualified subcontractors in the area and take a look at the project for you and say, yeah, this is really what they have on here for those numbers. That makes sense. And then the other thing I think that I mentioned earlier is another one just to hit again is don't get caught up in all these special financing tricks to the development of the project. Make sure it holds its own. If you get those things, if you get a good TIF in an area, tax incentive financing, if it isn't an opportunity zone, if there is some other, let's say you're taking an old building and there's some historical tax credits that go along with it, that's all bonus. That'll all just make it a sweeter return, a faster return for you. But look at those other factors up front. Work with a contractor, or even if it's a developer-driven project that they're kind of coming in as an investment with a developer, see what they know about the municipality. A municipality can be night and day, and we're in a community that you have so many right next to each other. You know, you could be on one side of the street and it's Ashwaubenon, and the other side of the street is Green Bay. And I'm not saying one is better than the other to work with, but one is better than the other. I'm not saying which one. I mean, those are the factors that can really add a lot of time, a lot of cost. Obviously, if you had your investment amount, but if there is your commercial lending that's coming in at a certain percentage, make sure that person knows what they're doing too. We had a project, a development project, right at the start of when everything was shutting down for COVID. And it was a group, we were investing in it as a contractor, but then there was a few others investing for an assisted living facility. And it was all pre-approved prior to the shutdown. And we started pushing dirt, knowing that everything was good to go or pre-approved. And then all of a sudden the bank came back and said, yeah, we're afraid that all your customers are going to die because of COVID. And we went, what? So they pulled out and we went and found a different lender for that, the other portion of what we needed for the project, and which is kind of funny in a medical profession, but what it essentially is assisted living. And you're basically, the average stay is like 2 years. I mean, you're there for the person's end of their life scenario. And one of the developers in the team actually owns several locations, right? We had a great operator that we knew what he was doing. And he goes, this is just the dumbest thing ever because we have an aging population. We've got a waiting list. We haven't even built the thing. And they're all afraid that we're not going to have any clients. We all didn't know what was going on. We were all kind of terrified, right? But then it was like, oh, man, so we were running and, you know, and then trying to find somebody that's going to match that rate that we had lined up. We ended up having to go a percentage and a half higher the rate for the next bank that came in because that one, you know, just pulled out. So there's a lot of different factors that can come into play and make sure you have those things figured out going in. But yeah, make sure you got a lender that knows what they're doing and a municipality that works with you and not against you. Some municipalities have a tendency to think that you're trying to get away with something. And it's like, no, I'm just trying to get this done. They can put a lot of resistance into your process. And if you look at how municipal committees meet and common councils meet, their timeframes could be, oh, well, we don't have another meeting for a month and a half. So if you don't get approval here, you got to wait another month and a half. Well, what does that cost you?
All right.
You want to eat up the rest of your time. Like I told you in the beginning, Michael, I can talk. So.
Well, it was great. This has been great to get the builder's perspective because I think a lot of the deals that our listeners are looking at, and a lot of the time ground up can be really appealing and look like great rewards. So it's always, often you don't hear from the developer the same type of honesty as you hear from a builder on what's possible and what's not possible and what to look out for.
I'll tell you, there are a couple different organizations, retail organizations that are obviously pretty heavy from the developer standpoint. And you sit around and you'll be at the cocktail or it'll be cap rate this, cap rate this, cap rate that, cap rate. You never hear them talk about all the other stuff. And it's like, okay, you're just throwing out rate of returns, which you can look good, like I said, on that spreadsheet. But then once all these costs are coming up and everything, well, then that cap rate starts changing pretty rapidly. And I'm not saying bad about developers. It's just that's the world they're in. So they're sometimes get caught up in the gut numbers, but not the real numbers of it. And that's where I think is the true winners are the ones that really spend their time doing that homework and diving into it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here and giving us your time today. And
for all our listeners,
thanks for joining us here on Surgeon Syndicate. We'll see you next time.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
We'll get back to our show in a minute. But first, I want to offer you an opportunity to accelerate your learning. My life changed and my ability to start becoming work optional changed when I gained the people and the knowledge to start investing in commercial real estate. One of the key people there was Ash Patel and joining his Invest Beyond Multifamily Mastermind. With that, I had the people and the knowledge. Well, that mastermind is no longer open, but for a fraction of the price, Ash has now made a course. And this is probably the most valuable set of information and quickest way to move along your learning curve. So if you are interested in actively investing in commercial real estate and retail and industrial and office, I would recommend this course to you. We're going to include a pre-sale link both in the show notes. It'll also be on the surgeonsyndicate.com website. And in your checkout, we'll save you another 1%. I know it's not a lot, but every little bit helps if you use the discount code MIKE1487. So take that step now and move your future forward. If you're not interested in investing actively, give us a call here at Fortress Capital and let's talk about what your goals are as a passive investor. But it's time to stop listening, start acting, and let's move your future forward. This has been an episode of Surgeon Syndicate. If you found value in this episode, know other surgeons are hungry to become job optional.
you can help them by sharing this content today. I also want to serve you better, so I want to offer you two things. Number one, I'll be able to give you the content in an even better way if you can take a moment and leave an honest review of the show explaining what you like and what you don't. Number two, if you are a surgeon and serious about this, you don't want to do this on your own because you don't want to make mistakes with your money. I'd be happy to help. Schedule a call and we can make a plan. I'm looking forward to having you with me on the next episode.